Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Pianist Orla Shaham has performed around the world, including St. Louis, of course, but she has not performed all that often with her husband, St. Louis Symphony Orchestra music director David Robertson. She will this weekend, twice, and it will be their last time performing together here before he leaves as music director next year. Orla keeps a busy schedule, personal and professional, thanks to music, marriage, and motherhood. She's the mother of 10-year-old twins, and she joins us now by phone from New York City. Orla, so nice to have you with us.
So great to be with you. You know, I listen all the time. It's nice to be on the air.
Well, it's nice to have you, and thank you for listening. We certainly appreciate that. And I think one of the questions that people would have about you, looking at all that you do, is, how in the world do you manage to do all these things that you do? I mean, you're a very busy lady and you have a family.
You know, I have a friend who says that I keep a lot of balls juggled in the air. So it's lucky that I practiced juggling when I was about 13. I guess that's how it works.
Well, that's one way to do it, I guess. But how much time do you spend on the road?
It varies. But at this point in the season, for example, I tend to be on the road 2 or 3 days out of every week. And that's quite tricky when you have kids at home who, you know, have school and can't necessarily leave school and travel with you everywhere you go. So it's always a balancing act. And thank goodness I have lots of good help and good family to work all these things out.
Well, speaking of a good family, you'll be joining part of the family this weekend, certainly, here in St. Louis at Powell Hall. How difficult is it to work with your husband, or is it difficult?
It's the opposite of difficult. It's the easiest thing in the world. It's the most natural thing, and it always has been for the two of us. You know, I don't know if you know this story, but we actually met in Powell Hall when both David and I were making our debuts with the St. Louis Symphony in 1999, and we met in the green room getting ready to go on stage and have our rehearsal, and that rehearsal was so wonderful and so easy and worked so well, and as did the concerts that week, that at the end of that weekend, both of us called up our managers and said, oh, I have to work with this person again. Little did we know where that would end up.
Yeah, that was almost 20 years ago. You know, I read a story in which that story was told, and I gather that there's some sort of an intuitive connection that you have when performing. How would you describe that?
You know, it's interesting. For me, I feel that David is such a sensitive collaborator, and he seems to almost read my mind before I've even understood it myself. But interestingly, over the years, I've spoken with a lot of other soloists that he performs with, and so many of them say the same thing about him. I think he is just incredibly empathetic and very quick to understand a soloist's motivations and ideas. I've had so many other soloists come to me and say, you know, where has he been all my life? He's right there with me, and that's exactly how I feel.
You also have performed and have recorded with your brother. And I'm just wondering if that same kind of intuition exists in dealing with a sibling.
In the case of me and Gil, it absolutely does, but it is a little different. I think for me and Gil, the reason we work so well together is because so much of our musical upbringing happened together, and so much of our musical education happened together. So we actually quite seriously view different aspects of music in the same sort of intellectual way. We thought about them, we processed them in the same sort of ways growing up. And so at this point, we have a lot of similar ways of approaching music that really come from the way we were taught. It's quite different and yet just as wonderful as what I have with David, which is absolutely on an instinctive level.
Well, how did this whole musical journey start? You grew up, I'm not sure for how long, but lived in Israel for a period of time with your parents. Were they musical? Is that how it got going?
And my parents were music lovers, but they were actually both scientists by profession. But I think it's that enthusiasm that they had and the love that they had for music that made it just impossible not to be completely swayed by it as well. They taught us from a very early age the importance of listening and what that does for you, for your mood and for your sense of yourself and for your ways of interacting with others. And it was sort of expected that we would learn some musical instrument or another. I don't think they thought we would, any of us would get where we got with music, but they did expect that as kids that, you know, we would take our lessons.
When did you realize that it was going to become your life?
You know, that's actually a really interesting story. When I was about 11 or 12, I had the incredible opportunity to play with an orchestra. And before I went to the rehearsal, my teacher said to me, "The orchestra will start and you'll know." And, you know, I'm 11 or 12. I thought, what does he mean, the orchestra will start and I'll know? What is this mystical stuff he's talking about? And sure enough, the orchestra started, and I knew I needed to be a part of that sound. I needed to be a part of that music making.
And then what? Once you realized that, what was the next part of the journey?
I was very lucky in that every year, as when I was a teenager and into my 20s, every year I got, you know, maybe one more engagement somewhere, one slightly more prestigious thing to do, so that my career developed very slowly. I never had a sort of a one really obvious, okay, now you're off moment. And I think that was very good for my development. It meant that it was very natural, organic development, and I never felt pushed to do things that I wasn't ready to do. So I sort of feel like I'm still on that road.
And how long will you stay on that road? Is this something you intend to do forever?
You know, people talk about that a lot, because musicians in certain ways were like athletes, right? An athlete, mm-hmm. at some point they have to stop because it's too physical. But the great ones, like the Roger Federers, they figure out how to keep going despite their body changing. So the great hope, I think, for any performing musician is that we can constantly redefine our technique and rediscover the way we use our body so that we can keep going forever. Because making music is, to me, as necessary as being able to speak.
You know, my next question may seem strange and may be strange, but I've wondered about this concerning someone like yourself, a pianist. Your hands. I'm of an age where I have a little arthritis in my fingers. If I were you, I could not play the piano any longer. How do you protect and keep your hands so that you can play?
That's an excellent question, and it's one pianists spend a lot of time discussing. And I have to tell you that pianists actually tend to get certain kinds of arthritis early on because it's an overuse arthritis, because we are putting so much sort of shock into the system every time we play and holding our hands a certain way. So we work on flexibility and we work on strengthening the muscles around the joints in order to cushion the joints. And of course, once you get past a certain point, you start talking to your doctor about the supplements that might help, but it's a big issue for sure.
Yeah, I would think it would be something that might keep one awake nights.
anything that keeps you awake nights, you should try to ignore.
That's exactly right. let me go back to music education, if I can. A couple of things I wanted to ask about your children. They're 10 years old, I believe. What is their music education like?
They're quite musical, both of them. They were sort of born knowing it, and I think when they were little, I realized early on that the best toys, the ones I felt the least guilty about buying for them, were little musical instruments. So from the very beginning, our house was filled with, you know, small guitars and small xylophones and not too many cymbals or anything like that. I couldn't quite handle that noise. But so they now at age 10, they both play, they both sing, they both really love music. I think it's a real part of themselves and who they are.
Is it too early to determine what kind of talent level they might have?
You know, I'm speaking as the proud mama. Uh-huh. They're definitely talented, but what they will decide to do with it, that's definitely too early to say. I think they have a lot of other interests, and they're pretty amazing kids, so they can do whatever they want.
You're still involved also with the Baby Got Bach program, which is working with youngsters.
Yes, and that's working with really preschool-age kids, so that 3 to 6 year old age range. And I started the program when my own kids were that age, and I wanted to have a musical sort of introductory program for them where they could not only learn about all sorts of different instruments, but also get a chance to taste what it would be like to go to a performance. Now, you can't take a 3 or 4 or 5 year old to most concerts. It would just be way too much for them. But Baby Got Bach is geared specifically for that level of attention span and for the physical nature of how they learn things at that age. It's just been a huge success and a great joy to me. We've been doing Baby Got Bach for so many seasons that, believe it or not, we have some alums of our early shows coming to volunteer in our current shows, which is just great.
Is it possible to recognize real talent at such an early age?
I think at that very early age, it's hard for me to tell. I know some people feel they can do it, but I do feel that now that I've seen my kids grow, then certainly around that age 7, 8, 9, you can really start to see who's going to be capable of what.
Which is about the time that you began to recognize and your talent was recognized.
Well, that other people recognized in me. Yeah. I mean, you know, when I was growing up, people always said to me, oh, you're so talented. And I never had any conception of what that might mean. But now as an adult watching kids, I'm beginning to understand what that might mean.
Now, we talk about your talent. We have an opportunity to listen to you a little bit anyway. We have a couple of selections here, and I know you're familiar with them. What would you like our audience to hear just to get a taste of Arla Shahan?
Well, I had a CD that was released last year with the music of Alberto Ginastera. This is some very exciting Argentinian music that has a great deal of energy, and that's been so much fun for me to get to know closer. He just recently celebrated, or would have celebrated, 100th birthday, and in honor of that, we made an album of a number of his pieces. This is the last of his Danzas Argentinas.
All right, let's listen. Pianist Arla Shahan, you know, that sounds like a real workout to me.
That piece gets my heart pumping even when I'm just listening to it, let alone what happens when I'm playing it.
What do you do to keep in shape? I mean, I'm serious about that. I mean, that sounds like it would be exhausting to perform.
It is. That piece is actually quite exhausting, and it's tough on the hands. But I did, you know, in my mid-30s, I did start working out with an actual personal trainer who has been doing all sorts of strength training and functional training with me, and that's helped me at the piano so much. I can't possibly talk about it enough. I feel like it's completely changed my approach to the keyboard, and it's given me so much more strength and endurance for music making, even though none of what I do with her is specific to the hands.
Before you perform on stage, is there something that you go through, something that you do, meditate or something to get you ready?
I have started doing certain stretches and just certain warming up certain muscles in my upper and mid back before I go on stage. It's funny, you know, once that process begins and you need to do those things for your body, you really just need to do them. You can't suddenly go back to not doing them.
How do you select the pieces that you're going to play, such as what the one we've just heard? Obviously, it's difficult. How do you make that selection?
You know, it's an interesting process for me because it depends on what I'm playing and for whom. So much of the time, I really make those choices myself at this point in my career, and I say, look, to myself, you know, look, I want to be learning this. I want to be improving this. I want to get this to a certain level, and I will schedule performances of those pieces accordingly. But in other cases, I am told or I'm asked by somebody if I'd be willing to learn something. In fact, in the case of that Ginastera, the wonderful harpist Yolanda Kondonafis called me up and told me that she wanted to put together a project for his 100th birthday, and would I be willing to learn these pieces? And I actually had never played them beforehand, and I was so thrilled to be introduced to that kind of technique and to that kind of sound. I'd heard them, but it was not something I'd ever done physically myself. So one of the great things about being a musician is when other people suggest something to you, and it opens up a whole new world, either sonically or orally or physically. That was a very exciting project for me.
And how long would it typically take to be ready, either to record or to perform it in public?
You know, that really depends on the piece. The one we just listened to really required a kind of a new technique that I had to figure out. So that took a few months before I could get to where I felt like I could get from the very beginning of that movement all the way to the end without breaking into little pieces. So that actually really took quite a long time. There are other pieces that take much less that I can do in a few weeks. And it's every composer sort of speaks his or her own language. And if you're already familiar with that language, that helps a great deal. And if you're even more so, if you're familiar with it from a physical point of view of having played it on the instrument, that's a great step up to being able to learn. So I see this with my kids. You know, when my son learned the first piece that he ever learned by Debussy, it took him a long time to just figure out what the notes were and what it was going to sound like. But by the time he got even just to the second piece by Debussy, suddenly his hand and his ear already could understand what that was going to mean, and it gets put together so much faster. It just goes to show our brains are so malleable. If we just give them a chance to learn something and to absorb something, the next level is so much easier.
We have about a minute and a half left, and I want to talk about the program on Saturday and Sunday. Why don't you tell us what you'll be performing?
I'll be playing the Rachmaninoff Paganini variations, or the Rhapsody on the Theme by Paganini, which is one of my absolute favorite pieces of music. It's sort of a single sweeping piece, but it's really many pieces in one. It's a giant work of chamber music, I feel, and it's had a lot of different collaborations between the pianist and different members, as well as different sections of the orchestra. So I'm particularly thrilled to play this with the great St. Louis Symphony Orchestra, an orchestra that I love so dearly and that I feel so close to. The musicians and our family are part of an extended family. So this is the kind of piece where I get to make music with so many individual players whom I've known and loved for, you know, almost 20 years. I think it's going to be really special music making this weekend.
Do you get a chance to rehearse before performing?
We will. We'll do a few rehearsals, and then we'll set out on stage, and, you know, the show goes on.
All righty. Well, I'm sure it'll be a full house. It generally is at Powell Symphony Hall, and we're looking forward to seeing you back here in St. Louis, Arlie Shaham.
Looking forward to being there, and thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being with us. We'll listen to a little more of your music as we say goodbye. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.